come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Thanks for listening to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. You can catch us every Saturday right here on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, or wherever podcasts are found. Thanks for listening. Every Saturday night, we sit around, watch a movie that we talk about it for your listening pleasure and enjoyment. These are the internet radio superstars.
Sean.
Holly.
Michaela.
And I'm Colin. And tonight, we watched a movie chosen by...
All of us.
What?
What? Maybe everyone but Colin.
Oh, no. It was a unanimous decision, I think, right? Because we have been doing this listener's choice selections for the past. We're going to do four of them.
Yeah.
This
month
is our
January.
Third.
You selected them, listeners, in November, and we made a list, watched a bunch of trailers, and made selections on what we were going to watch. So this one was chosen by... a Twitter user known only to us as G-Money.
G-Money.
Yep.
So G-Money, thank you for this
suggestion.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you,
sincerely.
G-Money.
Thank you.
Truly.
Appreciate it.
And the movie was called?
Terror Tract.
From the year?
1980. No, not 1980. It should be 1980. 2000.
2000.
It feels like 1980. 1980.
It did.
2000.
It felt aged.
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah.
Also known as The House on Terror Tract, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Depends on where you look.
I guess so.
Because we don't know if that was a British title or what?
Working title or?
I did look up a little bit of information on this just to find out where it came from. It was a movie that played a couple of horror film festivals and then was acquired by the USA TV network. And it aired in 2000 as part of like a Halloween series or something that they were doing. So it wasn't made for TV, as evidenced by at least one fuck, one shit, and a side boob.
Yes.
Also a great name for a book. One fuck, one shit, and a side boob. I would read that book.
Yo. Oh. So, I mean, what's I guess we just get into the movie, right?
I mean, like, Colin's at a loss for words.
It's an anthology film, right? So that's what we're saying this is. If you haven't heard of this movie, The Terror
We're not surprised,
Tract.
But.
Well, I was surprised that there actually is like a little cult following for
really?
This thing. Yeah. When I looked it up, just trying to find the information, I found it's made by a company out of Atlanta, Georgia, and they were really happy that, you know, they got to make another movie after this. But the soundtrack by Brian Tyler is like it's a thing amongst cinephile.
I like the soundtrack.
Yeah,
music collector.
Decent.
It was decent.
And I guess the movie, the last reference that I could find about it was like a bunch of people saying like this movie Terror Tract is on Netflix.
What?
It's not on Netflix anymore, but I guess when it was put on Netflix, it was like this is the first time we've been able to see this movie in like 10 years.
So do you think if we really push it, Mondo will release like a vinyl soundtrack for
there
this?
There is a vinyl soundtrack for this.
Oh, really?
I don't think it's Mondo, but somebody put,
And
Fright Rags will put out t-shirts and Shout Factory will do a deluxe Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's our mission.
This needs a Blu-ray.
Dude,
release.
Let's push it.
Come on.
Bringing back Terror Tract. It is on DVD. It's on a double feature with Cherry Falls.
Oh, really?
If anybody remembers Cherry Falls, that was another movie that went the same route. It was a film festival thing that ended up being acquired by USA, and they put them both out on DVD.
The last time I saw it, it was on Amazon for like $78.
Yeah.
Like a shit ton of money.
Yes.
Didn't Screen Factory put out a Cherry Falls Blu-ray?
I don't know.
I think they did. I'm going to look it up.
Look it up, bro.
Screen Factory put out a Cherry Falls Blu-ray, which I could not believe, having seen that movie.
That was like Jamie Blanks, right? He was the guy who did Urban Legends?
Yeah. Oh, Legends? Like...
I think he did the first one. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that was like he was graduating from the low budget world of Cherry Falls. Well, he did a short that was pretty cool. Then Cherry Falls and then.
I'm actually not surprised to hear that this is a cult following because I can totally see myself personally like catching this late night on USA and falling in love with it. Like I just searching for it for years. Like every night before you go to bed, you see what's on. You hope Terror Tract's on.
I saw this movie so long I can't find it anymore. Yeah,
Cherry Falls, Shout Factory.
Dun-dun-dun-dun.
There it is.
You know what that means? No, that doesn't mean anything.
That means
Terror Tract could be coming in the winds. Yeah.
That would be great.
Everybody start writing them. Yeah. Tell them that you really get want this.
Pound them for a terror tract.
Yeah. So terror tract.
John Ritter.
Not just any anthology. It's a realtor anthology.
Yes, it is. Yes.
The one tying theme in this movie is that this is a realtor telling all these stories.
Which and it's
a,
glorious.
Which is a great idea for a horror movie. Like, you get a different story with every house that you're showing the couple that you're bringing them around. And, you know, you get something. You can give them something different with each house you go to. Mm-hmm. And, boy, do we get something different with each house we go to.
I got a question for you. Has John Ritter, as far back as you can remember, has he always been a dramatic actor or has he been a comedic?
Comedic. Three's
Company.
Yeah,
Three's Company where it started.
Simple rules.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Bad Problem Santa? Child? Anybody?
Yeah.
Problem Child?
Yeah. Yes. Bad Santa.
I'm just making sure.
Eight Simple Rules.
Right.
I mostly know him as comedic, yes.
Yeah.
Because at some point somebody said, hey, we should put this guy in Stephen King's It.
Role.
So.
What? There was another. Wasn't there another horror movie he was in? I can't think of it right now. I remember him getting killed, like, viciously in something. I'm going to look it up.
Oh, yeah?
What is?
I should remember this, but don't.
But it's not just John Ritter. It's John Ritter with a nice, lush beard.
Oh.
He looks like a good beard.
He looks like Bob Vila in this movie.
He does.
Yeah.
Or at least Al Borland.
Yeah, you trust a realtor more if they have a full beard?
I trust anybody more if they have a full beard.
I mean, it's the beard just kind of adds to the authority.
It's like, there's nothing wrong with this guy. As long as it's not like a gangly
that's
one.
That's the thing.
Right?
It's a good beard.
Yeah. It's not a full lumberjack beard. It's just like a well-filled-in
really
beard.
It
does. It looks really fake.
It looks colored on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Yeah. So he's a real estate agent that's taking around a DeLuise offspring. Yes.
David DeLuise, who is the brother of Michael DeLuise, who was in Gilmore Girls.
Yes.
Who are both the sons of Dom DeLuise.
Okay. Yes. I was going to say, Dom DeLuise comes in there somewhere. Yep.
And he and his wife, David DeLuise and his wife, are shopping for a house in this neighborhood, which we will determine is the terror tract of the title.
Yes.
And so he takes him to the first house, right?
Yes.
Is there anything? I mean, John Ritter's character is a very exuberant realtor at the beginning, right?
He's very charismatic. Yeah. Like you feel like he's very successful, and they talk on that, asking him like, "Oh, well, you seem to be very well to do with your car," and he makes mention of having like really good incentives, the
five million
in the first 5 years or something like that.
He's even got a license plate on his car that says five mil.
Mm-hmm. And you can tell this couple are rich yuppies because she's got the 80s classic yuppie look going on, the white polo with the sweater over the shoulders. Which is what made me think 80s because no one in 2000 was dressing like that.
Very true.
Yeah.
Even the richest of the rich were not
Bride of Chucky. That's what I remember, where he gets the nails in him.
Oh, yeah?
I forgot. That's the one I was thinking. I'm like, he dies really bad in the movie. I'm like, right. Bride of Chucky.
Yeah.
That's it.
You're
forgot
right.
about that.
I know.
Yeah.
A classic.
Yeah. Wasn't his kid in like... that was a different...
His kid was in a lot of stuff.
Yeah. He's not in like...
Oh, he's in Sling Blade.
Freddy versus Jay. No, that's Tom Hanks' kid.
Colin Hanks.
Colin Hanks?
Yeah.
Okay. Freddy versus Jason?
Yeah. Isn't he in that?
No.
Then maybe it's the Ritter kid in
I think it's a Ritter.
Jason.
Yeah. It's a Ritter.
Yeah.
Yes. His kid is in that.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Wow. See, there. All these celebrity kids end up in their respective horror movies. All right, so the first story, do we get into? What was it called? The Nightmare.
Mm-hmm. The Nightmare.
Of course.
And how do we set this up for the listener at home? The Nightmare involves a...
It starts out with a husband leaving his house and leaving his wife. Looks like he's going on into work or on a business trip. He's leaving awfully late at night, and there's a figure watching from the bushes. And so, you know, she goes up to her room, starts getting undressed. It feels like there's a stalker kind of entering her house and going up to find her. And then we find out that it is her lover who is visiting her late in the night after her husband has left. I know.
This also starts thing that Michaela was pointing out, where everybody starts taking their shirts off in this.
Yes.
Yeah,
this guy really does not want to wear a shirt.
No, he does not.
I meant the wife. But, you know.
Yeah. Her takes hers off first, yeah.
But even that's what we noticed first, the wife taking her shirt off. Not that. I'm kidding.
Well, we were hoping that that was the moment where we're like, is this an R-rated movie or a made-for-TV movie?
Made
it sure
TV.
Felt like it was a TV movie.
Right. They bought it because they're like, we can put this on TV. We don't have to cut much out.
Yeah. There's also, because we were imagining that John Ritter is telling these stories.
Yes. Great detail.
How much detail is he including in these stories?
I mean, he has to tell them everything that happened. And he seems like a guy who would add little flourishes to the story. So explaining those details of the intimacy, I think, is something he would definitely do.
You ever get it all out. A realtor like disclose something about a property you were looking at?
Do I look like a man who would buy a house?
You're the
homeowner here. They don't care. No, you can be shit goes down in apartments. They try not to tell you.
Yeah,
I don't think they. Well, have
I thought
to tell
it was
you.
Like, isn't it legal that they have
for
to?
Houses? For I houses, think. For renting, yeah. They don't have to tell you shit.
I know when we were renting, houses. I asked because I wanted to hear a story like this. I wanted to hear a murder story, so I asked. I never got one.
Yes, a drug house. Huh?
Yeah,
what's going on?
Yeah. There was one house that we were looking at that somebody had died in, but it was, I don't know, I don't remember.
An old person just died?
No, it was a murder.
Oh!
Yeah.
That apparently was like on the news like a year before that or whatever. I did look it up, and now I don't remember.
See, you don't buy that house because there's always like people coming back and murdering you for whatever reason.
Yeah.
See,
had a murder basement.
See, now I'm just picturing Michaela stalking around realtors wanting stories.
Got any good murder house stories?
No one died here. Like, even a dog or something. Like, come on.
I mean, a lot of people, this is a really old house. Someone had to have died here at some point, right?
They're like, let me tell you about the square footage. No, that's great, but tell me more.
I mean, like, secret walls that push back and reveal, like, a murder room
that's
or something.
The dream.
Maybe.
That's the dream. It is.
Yeah. I built one in my, my dungeon down here. So the initial setup is the
cheating wife.
Yeah. And that's all misdirection because they're actually, like, you know, it's going to focus on these two people.
Mm.
And then, surprise, surprise, the husband comes home armed with a shotgun.
An old shotgun.
Yeah. So his plan here is to stage a murder-suicide.
Yes.
Yes.
Like you do.
Right. It's kind of like an intricate way of doing this.
A roundabout way. Why not just shoot them both and say it was a murder-suicide?
Well, because at this point you want like to get a little revenge on them. It's like, you fucked me over with this. Now I'm
personal now because he's like, I want you to see it. I'm going to let you wriggle a little bit and watch him die. It's very...
Mm-hmm. Which is,
yeah,
and it's kind of like if you think about in a real world situation, it's kind of terrifying to be like, what can you do? I mean, like, you can try and attack the guy, but he's going to shoot you, and he makes his wife like hang herself,
mm-hmm.
which is terrifying.
After writing the note that incriminates that she found this guy breaking into her house and shot him, and then she's going to hang herself,
and then hung herself.
But everything goes awry.
It goes awry. In not the best way possible.
He literally pulls the rug out from
the
room.
Oh, my God. That wouldn't work.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No. Not enough oomph into that.
Did you like the, like, dramatic tension they tried to add with, like, the thatch-seated chair she was standing on that kept, like, slightly giving away a little bit to make you think she was going to prematurely kill herself?
Well, that's what I thought, too, because I'm like, it's that chair. It's like, it's the one you hear about, like, it breaks through and then she's going to hang herself and something's going to go wrong.
Yeah.
They knew what they were doing with that.
Oh, they did.
Yeah. Sneaky bastards. They end up knowing what they're doing about a lot of stuff in this movie, which was kind of
surprising.
But it all does go wrong. And he's thwarted with the rug being pulled out from under him. And there's a fight that ensues. The wife eventually gets rescued by the lover, cut down.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some inconsistencies with shotgun that kind of bothered me in this first episode of this one.
Yeah, the fact that the husband has to reload the shotgun
even though he doesn't.
Just to buy the wife time to stab.
He did shoot the shotgun when the rug got pulled out.
It falls fired. Okay, yeah. All right.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah. I was going to say, I blocked that out.
Yep.
Me too. Yeah.
He was going back, shotgun went up, and shot over their heads.
Really?
Yes.
Both barrels. Well, I suppose you would because you fall.
Well, he had them both cocked.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Huh. All right. I missed that completely because I was wondering, like, why would he stop and reload?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was so pointed, too, the way they shot it that he was reloading. That's why it was extra weird. The camera, like, focus was right on him reloading.
Yeah, because if you don't get that he actually shot, that's a really weird scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, they should have had a little more focus on the first shot.
I think, like, a little more. Was there sound? It didn't feel like there was sound.
Which is weird because the Foley artist is all over the place in every other scene in this movie.
Like, there wasn't as much emphasis as there was on the footprints, but I think it was there a little bit.
Okay.
He really was like, these footprints, I'm going to make them sound great.
Right.
Like, clearly, he heard a gun, but he hears lots of footprints.
And squeaky doors.
Yeah. Right. But that's the reoccurring thing that he's kind of like, he's got to get that across. And boy, do they get that across. The squeaky feet and the fucking footprints that we see. Like, how many times do they repeat, in that first story, repeat shots? The outside of the house, her looking out the window to the muddy footprints coming up to the house.
Yeah.
And the squeaking feet walking towards the
door. Because they spent
all
the money in the second story. Which we'll get to. But.
They're teaching you. They're making you think a certain way so they can subvert your expectations later. But these two people, these two lovebirds, now that the husband, they turn the tables on the husband and kill him.
Yes.
And a rational person says, call the cops.
Call the cops.
Naturally.
You know, that probably you could explain this away in a way that the cops would still, you know, maybe be like, a little, you know, but there's
might go to trial.
Evidence.
Maybe some involuntary manslaughter, you know?
Yeah, but I think you could be like, we were cheating and all that stuff, but he did attack us and try to kill us.
I mean, there's his handwritten note, his car's parked like a mile down the road. It could have worked out.
Not for these people.
No.
Come up with the most insane. Like, how were they thinking this through? I was, thinking during the they weren't obviously.
No, how were they going to explain the husband being gone? Like, were they just going to leave and be like on the run?
Because you got to file missing persons reports to make all this thing seem legit, right?
And if she's going to get like his money, he's got to be dead. Like, he even says you're a rich widow now.
She
like,
has motive. Yeah.
Yeah,
they're just when this blows over, like, what are you talking about? There are people looking for your husband now that people just don't disappear.
Yeah, is he just going to be missing?
They decide to, do the old standby, the old Tales from the Crypt standby. You tie a couple of bricks to his feet and drop him off in the river.
Of course.
So this, of course, leads to at least three reoccurring scenes where the wife wakes up in the middle of the night, goes to the window and looks out. She hears somebody squeaking through the house, and there's these muddy footprints like leading up the walk and into the house, and somebody comes to the door. There was one pretty good jump scare moment.
When she goes back to the bed?
Yeah.
Yes. That one got me. Decent. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that either.
I'll give him credit for that one.
That's a good moment.
That's about it, that moment in the movie where you go like, okay, all right, so that actually kind of works, and now I'm paying attention to this movie.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, all right, you got me on that one.
So there's also
the cop.
The cop.
The friend of Lewis.
Right, the husband, the murdered husband. He's got this police buddy who comes over looking to go fishing. Or they had a fishing trip or something planned. Yeah. And he starts to suspect, maybe, we're not even sure. His dialogue later makes it sound like maybe he didn't.
Well, I was even wondering, because the husband, he clearly states that he's had this planned. Why would he plan a fishing trip the next morning with a cop? It doesn't seem...
Well, because you got to keep everything, on the up and up. Like, everything's normal. We had this plan that, oh, my God, my wife killed herself the night before.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Right?
Maybe he just wanted to kill his wife as a way of getting out of that fishing trip.
Maybe.
Maybe he was like, fuck, this guy keeps asking me to go on this goddamn fishing trip.
Damn it. What was he got? Clay?
There it is.
He was creepy as hell.
Creepy Clay, yeah.
That's a good point.
He knew something was going on. That's why he's being creepy.
Yeah.
I suppose he could, like, leave the house of the fishing trip, come back, and discover his wife and the lover.
Yeah.
I keep wanting to say mistress, but that's not correct.
Well, Clay at least puts them onto the idea that, hey, what car did he take? And then they're like, oh, no. His car is parked down the road, and they're going to find it, and we got to get rid of this car. How did they know what?
Where the car was parked.
They just went driving around looking for it.
You think so?
I think so. Because they're his car has to be somewhere.
I thought we saw them walking up to it, though.
They drove up to it.
But how would they know? They're like, I guess they were driving around. Like, there it is. But how would they know he, parked near? They would have been fucked if he didn't.
If you factor in how long it took him to leave, the other guy show up, and then him to show up with the shotgun, it couldn't have been that far.
I guess so. Smarter than they look, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People definitely saw them walk up to that car, though. Like, there was definitely witnesses to that.
Like, people saw things.
Oh, wait. People walk up to cars all the time. What is it?
And I always suspect them of doing something wrong.
But that's the car of a man who's missing.
Right,
so.
Yeah. Right. This is going to be a problem later. Mm-hmm.
But they find the car, and they can't move it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no keys. Because there's only one set of keys for this car. And rather than, find some way to start this car, I know there's, no YouTube back then, so they can't Google how to hotwire a car to figure this out.
It's 2000. There's some internet.
There's something. They should be able to, or look up how to do it or hire someone to do it. Mm-hmm. Something. But no, they decide, he's like, I have to go back. You have to go down there and get the keys from your husband in the lake. It's like, what?
At night.
Yeah.
Well, why? Yeah, why? At least she also shared our sentiment because she was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love when the characters have the same reactions as us.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like, wait, what?
Yeah. Voice of the audience.
It kind of feels like the writer is like, you know, is right there with like watching the movie with you, kind of. You know? Right. It's like expects like, what you're going to do. And you know.
Right. They're like saying like, yeah, we know, but we'll just have a character react to it and be fine. And he leaves at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What is he doing for 4 hours before he decides to get in a boat and go to that lake?
He had to go get the snorkel gear.
Yeah.
I know when I shop for
snorkel
gear.
He just had a mask, though. He didn't actually have, like, a snorkel. He just had the mask.
Right? Yeah.
He just had goggles.
He tried on all the different snorkels.
It would have been better if he showed up with a tank of oxygen or something, and he's just diving in there.
That would at least shown some forethought.
Like full-on diving gear. And shown,
flippers
like,
and everything?
Yeah, and shown, like, a montage of him actually putting it on.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Some rocking music.
Yeah.
This is another moment where he takes his shirt off to dive in. But goes, like we said.
But keeps his jeans on.
Keeps his jeans on.
Wet jeans.
Wet jeans are not good.
Wet jeans are not good.
They weigh you down or something? Never
going
swimming.
Like
it's so uncomfortable. Yeah. You chafe.
Wet jeans?
You're chafing.
It's not comfortable.
It's bad. And yes, it'll weigh you down
a lot. Yeah.
It's bad.
It's not good.
Yeah, so this sets up the because... Once he gets down there, he sees...
She's been having the dreams.
Yeah, because she's been having the dreams of the husband's coming back and strangling her. And so at this point, Loverboy dives in and is attacked by the living dead corpse of the husband.
Mm.
Then she wakes up and we go like, what? Did this actually happen? Was she seeing through his eyes? Or was this another dream, you know, just kind of a premonition that something bad has happened to the other guy?
Then she goes back to the window because she hears noises yet again for the third time.
Yeah.
Sees the footprints again. And so we get a repeat of the scene where we hear the squishy footprints outside the door. Once before she, opened it up and it was her dead husband. Mm-hmm. Then she locked the door and her dead husband was in the bed. That's where the jump scare was. So this time she's ready.
She's not fucking around anymore.
No. She grabs a shotgun from under the bed. She lets that door handle go. And then she's like, no! By the way, she's the best screamer. When she woke up that first time from that nightmare, where she's just staring off and nothing, just great.
Uh-huh.
But
this time
she's ready, and she's not, like Holly said, she's not fucking around. She shoots through that door because she's gonna kill that dead husband that's coming back for her.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened?
She kills Loverboy.
He got the keys.
Came back.
Dun, dun. That's like a pretty decent, that feels like a Tales from the Crypt type
story. Totally. Twilight Zone, a little bit.
Yeah. Or Alfred Hitchcock Presents or something like that.
It does. It feels
because
like...
it sets up the whole thing that there's like a supernatural element to this, but you realize that this is only happening in her dreams.
Mm-hmm.
We're still seeing it, so it feels, you know, like it's a ghost story.
Right.
But it's not. You know, it isn't. It's all misdirection to get you to that last...
Which is pretty good. I'm saying
And she's so distraught.
So distraught.
Hangs herself. The murder-suicide actually came to fruition.
Oh, shit. But that is where the supernatural comes in because the cops say that she's covered in some type of slime. Dun, dun, dun.
What?
End of story
one. End scene.
Boom.
Story two takes place in another house because, of course, when the
couple, when he tells them that story.
Right. They're like, we don't want
this. You always got to come back to John Ritter.
Yep.
Doing his just that nervous, like, I'll tell you what happened. Like, he's just like, you can tell he's under pressure, that's a great version of John Ritter. The under pressure, just like, all right, that nervous smiling that he does and everything. It does it very well. Mm-hmm. I like that John Ritter.
I
just love that he has that like guilty conscience where he's like, I have to tell you the story.
He's like, all right, I guess I have
like,
to.
But have
a lot of it's humorous almost, right? It's like, well, I shouldn't have said anything. But since I did, I have to tell you by law that this is where, you know, you don't have any pets, do you?
Right. He's trying to keep a happy moment. He's just like, it's not so bad. It's all right. It's a house. You know, people died, but whatever. Yeah. We're good.
He's well cast for this. I'll say that.
Yeah. So.
He made a career out of before Jason Bateman did it being like the put upon stressed out businessman.
Oh yeah, like, absolutely.
Jason Bateman's taken that to a whole other level.
Very true.
But yeah, that originally was John Ritter, and that very much is this character in this movie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He does it very well. But
what's the name of the second movie?
Second Bobo. Story?
Bobo.
Bobo.
Enter Bryan Cranston.
Holy
Bryan
Cranston. We looked it up. So this was the same year
Malcolm in the Middle started.
All right.
So.
And I remember him being on an episode of The X-Files. It must have been right around the same same time. Mm-hmm.
Which is the reason he got cast in Breaking Bad, because Vince Gilligan was a writer on X-Files. Liked him in that episode and liked working with him. Thought of him for Breaking Bad.
There you go.
Hollywood
history.
But Malcolm in the Middle must have seen this episode and thought, that is a dad.
Well, especially because, like, it opens with him shaving with a straight razor, and in the opening credits of Malcolm in the Middle, like, he's shaving, like, his chest hair with a razor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Some symmetry there.
So it was his shaving skills is what landed the role.
And, like, in the shaving scene, he's holding a newspaper, and, like, his whole character choice in this movie is reading the newspaper over and over again. Is there a universe where these are the same character?
I hope so.
He's a dad, man.
He's so dad. When he's running around with a shotgun later, he's got, like, his polo tucked into his dad jeans with the belt on his knee. He's so dad.
I love it.
That's great. Perfect.
Cranston.
Fucking Bryan Cranston.
Perfect dad.
Perfect dad.
That's the name for a movie that should star Bryan Cranston.
I mean, isn't...
America's Dad.
Isn't there, like, a Robin Williams, like... World's Greatest
that's,
Dad.
That's yeah. a really World's sad movie, dad. Though.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a real bummer of a movie.
Oh.
It's not a comedy. No. It's not.
We'll rethink it.
Well, Bobo is the story of a little girl, Bryan Cranston's daughter, who meets in her backyard a monkey named Bobo.
Yes.
Dressed in a little red suit.
Yeah, which we come to learn is an organ grinder suit.
I mean, yes. With a little hat.
I like how that never came back.
I know. I'm kind of disappointed. I'm like, okay, yeah, so it sits there. So we know nothing. Okay, well, we know nothing about this monkey, but.
We might know everything about this monkey. This may have been the monkey of that era, which I think it was.
Is that the monkey from Friends?
I know it's the monkey from Monkey Shines, which is George Romero's, like, vodka-fueled nightmare from the 80s.
Right.
It's the same monkey from that, but I didn't see its other credits. I didn't read its IMDb thoroughly enough.
What's his real name?
Boo.
Boo!
Nice.
Without any research, I'm going to say it's the Outbreak Monkey and also the monkey from Friends.
From Friends. Those are my three. Marcel.
Yes, that's it.
He's a well-trained monkey, but he's not the monkey from Raiders of the Lost Ark. We're saying because that was too early.
I think so.
I don't know how old monkeys.
Right.
Grow
later
to be.
On, the monkey.
We don't know. They could live to be like 150.
Maybe.
They could.
I'm always have the same great complexion.
They do. They always have that look.
True.
I'm hoping the monkey from later years, like from The Hangover.
Oh, yeah.
And whatnot, like, is a relative of
yeah,
this monkey.
Right.
I like to think there's a lineage to these monkeys.
Like a Hollywood lineage.
Right,
for monkeys.
Where this is, like, from down from generation to generation.
A dynasty.
Yes, this is the monkey
Boo's
family.
Son.
Yes, exactly.
What was it?
Boo.
Boo, yeah. Okay, yep. It is Boo. Yep. Yeah.
Like, there's that one dog that played, like, you know, on Frasier, and I'm pretty sure he's, like, on Wishbone and all that.
Yeah, the little Jack Russell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he had a long line. There was a movie about that dog. I forgot what it was called, but... You know, they play a lot of stuff.
TV's best dog?
I think so.
Something?
Yeah. Yeah.
America's it's a real bummer when they, like, revive TV shows with animals in them, though, because you're like, oh, that dog's probably dead now. It's always a real bummer.
I was thinking that with the Gilmore Girls revival.
He's barely alive. He's old as shit, but he's alive.
That was really him?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Same dog. Yeah.
Yay!
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shocking.
I have no idea what they're talking about.
In season 6 Paul and 7 of Gilmore Girls, there was a dog brought in towards the end of the series, and then when they rebooted this year, the dog was still alive. So they were
How
able
many
to keep
years
it in.
Is
10.
It? 10 years.
Damn. So that's
awesome.
Impressive. Yeah.
There you go.
Fantastic.
They really did their all with the Gilmore Girls.
This is probably a good idea for a documentary, the family dynasty of Hollywood star animals.
I'll bet it's out there somewhere.
Maybe. If not, we want you to make it and show it to us.
Please do.
I don't know if I want to see behind that curtain. It might be really sad.
Well, probably, but that's great drama. That's why it's a great...
Werner Herzog will do it.
Yeah.
It'll be really depressing.
Be yes. That'd be great. Werner, talk about these dead animals. Go.
I once saw this monkey.
It's my Werner Herzog.
That was pretty good. Werner, you're here?
Werner.
So this, the little girl makes friends with Bobo, who's a preternaturally smart monkey who loves the little girl and hates Bryan Cranston.
How could you hate Bryan?
I
don't understand.
And Bryan Cranston's dog by extension.
Oh.
Yes. Max?
Max.
Max.
Who
Every
takes an instant
Max.
Dislike to the monkey.
Wasn't the dog from fucking, what's the killer? Ali Sheedy. The dog movie.
Man's Best Friend.
Man's Best Friend. Wasn't that Max?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was Max. Like every dog that's either killer or a friend was Max in the 90s at least.
Except for the one from, what the fuck was that Corey Haim movie, Watchers. What was that dog's name? Was it Max?
It might have been Max.
Did you block that out?
No, that was his Lost Boys dog.
Okay.
It was Max. Okay.
See, but Max.
No, that was the Alaskan dog.
Oh, that's right. Max was the evil vampire. Nanook was the
Nanook.
Dog.
That's
Damn
it. Yeah.
So it was probably. Well, we'll go back and listen to that episode. Yeah. The Watchers episode.
No, don't. I'm sorry. Don't do that. We have better episodes. Don't do that.
So Bryan Cranston becomes obsessed with getting this wild animal out of the house. This is not unreasonable.
No,
I don't think.
No. No. As a father, I see his where he's going with this and be like, I don't really want a monkey in the house. Like, we don't know where this monkey's been.
Right.
Just because it's wearing a red suit doesn't mean it's not going to bite you and give you rabies.
Yeah, or tear your eyes out.
Yeah. Or tear your eyes out.
Yeah. I was frankly a little pissed at the wife for not laying the smack down a little more.
Right? She should. There should be
she
a...
She might as well have not been in this for how much
right?
she did.
Very Seriously.
True. But there should have been a united front as far as that monkey. It's just like, you know, just... I mean, yeah, they were fine playing for an afternoon, but, you know, that monkey doesn't get something he wants... Monkey's gonna get pissed off.
Like, I don't. What parent even lets an afternoon happen with a strange monkey?
Right.
Have you seen Outbreak?
Yeah, exactly.
A monkey in an organ grinder suit in your backyard in the suburbs is not a normal occurrence, and you shouldn't treat it like one.
No. You don't know what that monkey
he's
has.
He's wearing pants.
I mean, that is kind of like the defining thing. Like, the monkey is wearing clothes.
And like the guy in the first act takes its shirt off at one point and is just wearing pants. Right.
It's true.
Yeah. But clearly it's a civilized monkey. That's why we trust the monkey.
Until.
Right?
It's sipping tea with the daughter. It's very civilized.
Right. It knows how to,
Max doesn't like it either. Max chases around the living room.
And destroys half the
destroys
fucking
the living
room.
And the thing takes like a fucking little bust of something and throws it on the dog's head.
I know.
That fucking monkey.
Yeah.
Ugh.
This is what gives Bryan Cranston the idea that this monkey yells. Might be evil.
Evil?
Which he voices to the wife.
He does. I just find it, I don't know, evil. It's like, wow.
Which seems maybe a little bit, you know.
Too much.
Like, yeah, too much
too
at
far.
That point.
Yes.
Like, but okay.
Maybe there's something wrong with the monkey and you can express that, but evil?
Yeah. Hmm. He bites Bryan Cranston at one point, which point we were all hoping that Bryan Cranston would turn into a monkey man.
Yes.
It would have, more Twilight Zone-y would have been if he gets bitten and then slowly starts turning into a monkey.
And the, monkey turns into Bryan
Cranston.
Yes,
and takes his place. Yeah. And he's like, yes, honey, you can keep the monkey. And it's her dad. Oh, that would have been great.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted. Yeah. But
I never knew that I wanted that to happen until I saw this.
I didn't want that to happen. But what we got... I also liked.
Yeah, and it's probably
got,
better, folks. I mean, what we got was probably
we
better.
We got Bryan Cranston going to war with a monkey.
Right.
Which,
yes.
And much like Obi-Wan Kenobi and Revenge of the Sith, this monkey always has the high ground.
Always.
Always. Has the high ground.
Yeah. Up
climbing
on everything.
Around on the,
thanks like, for letting me set drawers. That up and knock it down in that horrible
you
way.
Did. Because it really is. It's Bryan Cranston. He's got a shotgun at this point because, you know, at a certain point, I mean... He captures the monkey because he's, after he gets bit, he's had enough with this. Yeah. And so in the middle of the night, he gets his gloves on and goes and captures the thing and shoves it in the cage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All to his daughter's, like, breaking heart.
Mm-hmm.
And then he makes fun of it and puts it in the living room and says, Max, watch that monkey. And then he goes to bed. Wakes up the next morning, goes to read his paper, and Max is dead.
Stabbed
to death.
And there's little tiny monkey.
Little monkey footprints.
Little bloody monkey footprints. Who knew?
Yeah. I just imagine that they couldn't get the monkey that day, and so they grabbed a baby and they're dipping his feet in little, and then just walked him across. It was like, we got to get these footprints somehow.
Well, there was one point that Bryan Cranston got attacked by the monkey. And monkey's, you know, jumping on the back, as is going to happen in a story with you know, wild monkey. But I was like, in some of the quick cutting. Where the thing's clawing at his face.
Yes.
I'm like, is that a little fake monkey paw?
That's what I was going to... Well, that's what I was going to say. We get
a back scratcher type thing.
It's on a stick. But we get our favorite thing, which is like people wrestling with dummies.
Oh, yeah,
dolls.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they're just like... Ah, I'm going to crash into all the walls.
Yeah.
They're whipping around. Gives it movement. It's one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
And the fact that it was Bryan Cranston. Just
right? Like serious,
icing on the cake.
Dedicated Bryan Cranston fighting with a monkey. Mm-hmm. That's glorious to me.
Mm-hmm.
That I love.
That's right. You don't get to see that when he's Heidelberg.
Shut up. All right. You don't get to talk like that.
So,
you don't. You watch
you were close.
Nothing of this.
There must have been a little bit of a dip in his career because he was on Seinfeld before this.
He was.
He was.
And then he did this. And then made a huge upswing, but
he did.
A little bit of a dip there.
Sure.
In the career path.
But even stuff. Like Malcolm in the Middle was like the boom, and then the Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Man, that guy had a career.
He did.
We say in past tense. What's he doing now? Drumbo?
Why him? The James Franco movie.
Oh, Sneaky Pete's coming out.
Yeah.
He looks pretty good in that, actually.
Godzilla 2. Oh, that's right.
He's dead. Yeah. Sorry, spoilers.
Jesus.
Yeah. My bad.
Well, he, again, comes to, I mean, he's not like a, his character isn't completely irrational in this movie at this point. Oh. He says, I got to go take care of this monkey, so I'm going to go to the pound and hire.
Well,
call first, animal control, yeah.
Well, first, he, like, what he does when he finds that Max has been killed is that he bags him up and brings him to the garage. I mention this because we get a little repeat of this later on. So he bags Max up and brings him to the garage. We're all questioning, like, what's he doing putting the dog in the garage?
Because he, like, puts stuff on top of it. He, like, covers it up.
Right, like, he's going to hide it. He does end up burying the dog later. But it's kind of weird that he just bags him up in the garage.
Well, he was doing it, we find out, to hide it from his wife and daughter. Yeah. Well, specifically the daughter. I think he was going to tell the wife at some point that, you know.
They're going to notice the dog is gone.
Do you know what that animal did?
Yeah, but at this point, that little brat's so focused on the monkey, she's not thinking about the dog.
Yeah, she doesn't care about it.
She even said, can't we just put Max outside and keep the monkey inside? Cold. Like, right?
Always want that new shiny thing.
Cold. Don't they live in Tampa?
It feels like, this is like a Florida residence. Yes.
It was like the Tampa town.
That shopping center he was at, that was real rough.
Yeah. So he calls animal control.
He goes to animal control. And who is it, Holly?
Enter 90s favorite WCW wrestler, Buff Bagwell.
Buff the Stuff.
Yes.
Yes.
And you're like, if anybody's got a chance against this monkey,
it's the Stuff.
It's Buff Bagwell.
Yeah.
Obviously.
It's fantastic.
So he goes over to the house with
his little catching rod.
Yeah. What do you call it? It's a lasso.
Little collar rod.
Snare pole, I think.
Snare pole. He's like, hey, you wait outside. Give me a little bit of time to catch this little fucker.
I had to point out, Brian Cranston.
There's the fucker.
Brian Cranston gave him a ride to his house.
Yeah, one of the weirdest things. Like, your animal control, don't you have a truck?
Don't you have a van or something?
Equipment of some sort to
handle
this?
Brian Cranston paid him a $100 bill up front and said there was another $100 in it for him if he kills the monkey.
So this guy still
talked him into giving him a ride.
Yeah. Like, how's he getting this thing back to animal control? He's like, now you gotta give him a ride back.
It's like, all right, but
so
I don't,
this was a back alley transaction.
Right.
Brian Cranston's the one getting taken for a ride here.
Yeah.
Boom.
I see what you did there.
See what you did there.
Yeah,
I like that. I like it.
But it's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate for Buff.
Bagwell is no match for Bobo.
Poor Buff. Yes. Brian Cranston's burying the dog, and he's like, it's been a little time. I'm going to go check on Buff. He goes inside. What does he find?
He finds a human pincushion.
So, oh, my God.
The monkey has taken every single knife in the drawer and somehow gotten the drop on Buff Bagwell.
Not likely.
Colin says that knowing nothing about Buff Bagwell now.
Is it Biff? Biff? No, it's Buff Bagwell.
So,
stabbed to death 67 times.
Oh.
Lying in the kitchen. So what do? You call the cops. No.
No, you grab the murder weapon. And freak out is what you do.
Okay.
And the way the camera pans, it makes you think it's going to be like strangled with a snare pole because you see the cord, like the end of the snare pole sticking out around the island in the kitchen. You pan around and they're all perfectly straight in his chest too, just like a block of kitchen knives. That's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah. Well, that monkey is very, orderly monkey.
Precise. You know, he got him like once and then it's like,
stuck him the rest of the times. Yeah.
It's like he played darts with it or something. Like,
kind of.
Throwing knives or something. It was weird.
That has to be what it was, right?
Right?
He's a trick monkey.
He's up on the cabinets throwing them at him.
Yeah.
He does like to sit on top of everything.
Yes, he does.
True.
Always on top of something.
He gets the drop on everybody except for one person later on. But before we get there, okay, so instead of calling the cops, Bryan Cranston puts Buff Bagwell in a garbage bag, takes him out the garage.
He bagged Bagwell.
He did.
Oh, that was bad. Okay.
But I'm sure. Yeah.
He's going to bury him in the backyard, too. Because that's what you do. Because how else could you explain how this guy got killed in your house?
I don't know. But it's almost proto. If you've ever seen Breaking Bad, it's when he plays Walter White, sometimes he gets into very serious situations, but he's kind of a buffoon, so it leads to the comedy in the show. This kind of felt like a little bit of that. Because he's being very serious about a man who was just killed in his house, but then you go back to the joke of him having bagged up Bagwell and pulling him into his garage. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially those first two seasons when, like, Walt and Jesse are first getting to know each other and there's a lot of awkward moments like that.
Yes.
That's definitely what it felt like.
A lot
like.
Of fumbling. Yes. Yeah.
But there's always, because it's always, the comedy comes from him as that character playing it so serious, thinking he's such a badass, and then getting into situations where he's just kind of bumbling at some points. It's very funny. But that was kind of the vibe we got in this part.
He's
very serious about trying to kill a monkey in his house, and he's bagging dudes and pulling them into his garage.
That no one else believes is a threat except him. Like,
well, because he hasn't told anybody else that what's been going on. Yeah. I mean, that's other than like that monkey. I got to get that monkey. So at this point, I think Bryan Cranston's character loses his fucking mind. I suppose you would. You got a killer monkey running around. So he gets, this is where he gets the shotgun. And he's like going to stand guard and wait up at night waiting for this monkey to show up. But he puts a trap out the backyard also.
The bear trap.
Which the monkey uses to triggers it in the middle of the night. So Bryan Cranston goes outside and the monkey can get back in
Bryan
the house.
That's a Bryan Cranston trap.
Yeah. Smart little bastard.
Yep.
But around here, so I think when he gets back inside the house, he goes up to the bedroom.
So we get into the oblique angles. Is oblique? Dutch angles.
Dutch angles.
Yeah. But they're oblique or opaque or something like that.
Because something is off.
Something is off.
It was a real big trademark of the 90s, which is really rubbing off on this movie a lot.
Just like Battlefield Earth. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. Oh, yeah.
Sure.
There's not a straight angle in that movie.
For no good goddamn
reason. Maybe not a straight actor. We don't know. John Travolta's in that movie, I'm just saying.
Church of Scientology is going to come after now.
Who was the bad guy in it? Was it like Forrest Whitaker?
Forrest Whitaker is in that movie.
And Barry Pepper is in it, too.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Indeed. Oh my lord.
Should that movie show up on the?
You know what? I think
it really
so.
Should.
That's not a bad idea.
Right, I have not
jotting
seen
that one down for some time in the future. Okay. All right, but he discovers Heisenberg discovers.
Just keep going.
His wife has been murdered.
The useless wife
slashed in the bed. So at this point,
with the straight razor.
Right.
Because he finds
and he fingers the
murder weapon again.
Okay, but that was what made me think that, like, okay, this whole story is going to be about how this guy is crazy.
Right.
And thinks that there's a monkey, but he's actually responsible for all the murders because, I mean, when we go back later, when the cops investigate this, whole series of murders, they're going to find his DNA is all over everything.
Yeah, fingerprints.
So it's like it was actually him committing these, thinking about
no one will ever know about that monkey.
Right. But that's not the case.
No.
It actually is a serial killer monkey.
Sure is.
Who, God knows how long it's been doing this before. It like killed some family, then it ended up in their backyard, and then it's going to go off and do it again after this.
It's just the neighborhood murder monkey. That's what I mean. It's not a thing?
Yeah.
No, yeah.
It's not a trope or anything?
Yeah. It should be. Can we start it?
The milkman, the kid that mows everyone's lawn, murder monkey. Yeah.
But he goes searching through his house for the shotgun again after he finds his wife. Pulls that shotgun.
He knows where to go look for it. He knows.
Where does he go? He goes to his daughter's room. He's like, "Where is it?" And that classic Cranston yell.
Oh, yeah. Now we've got Crazy Cranston, and it's fantastic.
Oh, Crazy Cranston. I love it.
That yell. Oh.
That's so good.
Yeah. As he's pulling through everything. Wait, wasn't the monkey, like, in the bed?
That was earlier. Well, no. He goes to his daughter's room.
It was, like, creepy sitting on top. It was, like, perched on, like, above her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when he went to get it with a cage, it was creepily.
Right, yeah.
Right,
so many scenes of them going in.
Yeah. Then it screams and wakes the daughter up, and she's all disturbed. That's when it was creeping above, crouching above the bed.
And there was that great stuffed animal fake out, too.
Right, yeah.
Oh, that was nice.
That's like, and see, that's another 80s trope of, like, the monsters and the stuffed animals, like E.T. and everything. Mm-hmm. That's 80s exactly trope. Yeah. This movie's full of 80s tropes.
Oh, yeah.
It really is.
They need to bring some of that shit back.
I think so.
Yeah. But he does. He goes to his daughter's room. Yells at her, "Where's the monkey?" Is this where it jumps on him and starts attacking
him? Yeah, because it's in the closet. Yeah. He goes into the closet.
Oh, in the closet. Mm-hmm. Right.
It jumps out.
Classic closet.
But then he knocks the bureau over on top of the monkey in one of the greatest shots.
And the monkey's struggling to get out. He wasn't crushed to death. He's struggling to get out.
He's just trapped from the waist down, so the monkey's trying to pull out. Daughter sees this, is like, "Dad's gone crazy." Came into the room, said, "Your mom's dead." Yeah. Obviously, it looks like Dad did it. She gets the shotgun and blows Dad away.
Oh, shit.
Leaving murder monkey out to... ravage the neighborhood because apparently the daughter goes nuts.
Daughter goes nuts, tells the story to the cops, and then never says another word.
And thank God she did because otherwise we wouldn't know the story.
The way I heard it,
as
he says.
So that brings us to...
House number two is down. This couple does not want to live there.
No.
So we go to house number three.
Where they're like, nobody died in this house, right? At this point, they're getting wise.
Right.
The idea that, he's taking us around to places like where...
Something's happening in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
Nobody died in this one, right? It's like, no one died here.
Nothing like that.
No.
But what happened in this house? What story is called?
The Granny Killer.
The Granny Killer. This one I thought would be Colin's favorite because it involves a serial killer, and it's almost like kind of a little Black Glove Killer-ish, a little bit, like at the beginning. It's a little bit, but it's a serial killer, which I was like, I'm like, oh, good, something that's not like weird Twilight Zone-y. It's actually just a serial killer story.
Yeah.
Which I liked. But we had a young man.
Well, this is like classic Alfred Hitchcock Presents kind of stuff that they're setting up here. I mean, you know. Yeah, the a young guy shows up at a psychiatrist's office. Mm-hmm. It's a female psychiatrist. She's alone in the building. Everybody else has left. They also have Chekhov's, what do you call that? The paper
what is that
sorter.
Called? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the pointy thing you put receipts on.
Yeah.
Which she slams the receipt
down
earlier.
No one knows what that's called.
That's not foreshadowing at all.
Just well, that's what I'm saying. If you have the whatever the Chekhov's gun, you don't bring it up in the first act.
Very good. Yeah. If you reveal a gun in the first act, by the third act,
that was pretty good because it didn't really draw attention to itself.
Right.
It was just like this is a thing that she's got, and I've seen this on other desks.
I think it drew attention to itself. Okay. There was the sound was upped on it.
It was decidedly sharp too. Like it was.
It's like you should see this and know this.
Yeah. So the setup
my first thought was, I don't know how many psychiatrists have pointy things just sitting around in there. Right.
True.
She had many. She had that. She had the letter opener.
Yeah.
She was ready to kill someone.
She's kind of
a
terrible psychiatrist.
I always wonder if like psychiatrists watch these things and just go like, that's a terrible version of a psychiatrist because she didn't do anything, any kind of medical or therapy or anything. It's basically she sits there as he tells this story. Mm-hmm. This kid believes that he is seeing psychic impressions of a serial killer who is wearing a granny mask going around the city preying on women, and he is seeing these visions and is troubled by them and wants to talk to the psychiatrist for an ulterior motive, right? Which is all the setup. So you got the ways that this can go is either the kid is the serial killer, has been blacking out, and then he's going to turn on her in the end because she's alone and everybody else is left. She's the serial killer because she was making sure everybody was gone. So when he comes in and starts telling this story, she can kill him.
Which is what I thought for most of this, that he went in there like to confront her. It's like, I had another premonition. I found out who it was. It was you.
Yeah.
That's where I thought it was going for most of the time.
I did too at the beginning, but it was that phone call that she makes where her receptionist calls her. And says, you know, like, I got to go. And she's like, wait, can't you stay for just I'm like, if she was trying to clear the building, I'm like, that's the moment where you know which way this story is going to go.
Yes.
But, or the third option, I guess, is what we end up going with, where he is actually trying to.
Having premonitions.
Yeah, he's having the premonitions, and he sees that she was a victim. And so he's trying to stop the murder.
Yes. All the while building him up as being very suspicious.
Yeah.
This whole time.
The link to this is that, or to the rest of the story, is that he's the son of somebody who lived in the house that they're looking at, right?
Yes. The parent, that was his house. So nobody got murdered there.
Right.
But he was having premonitions of people getting murdered by the granny killer behind the video store in his high school. Was there another one?
And eventually his ex-girlfriend.
Oh, his ex-girlfriend, yes, where he finds the head.
Yeah.
Yes, she gets stalked. Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
Also, as Holly pointed out, to connect the 6 degrees of shirtless separation he was shirtless, and also the psychiatrist is the bra lady from Seinfeld, so she was shirtless in Seinfeld.
Bryan the girl Cranston. Took her top off in the pool.
Yep, right. Yep. She did.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's shirtless in this entire
Bryan Cranston was also in Seinfeld.
Yeah, Seinfeld is the key.
I'm sure, John Ritter was on Seinfeld at some point, right?
Probably.
I think.
Probably.
Everybody was on at least one episode of Seinfeld.
Yeah, the odds are in our favor. Mm-hmm.
Well, the movie is packed with, like even the blonde girl in the first story. I'm like, I've seen her, and so I haven't looked it up yet. But everybody who shows up in these things, the husband, I've seen him in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I
just
have
can't
too.
Place them. They're, solid TV actors, which is why it feels like it's kind of, like, on that low, TV budget,
Because at that point, everybody was kind of TV at that point. Everybody in it. They weren't really movie stars. I mean, they did movies. John Ritter's probably the biggest star of this one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But everybody else is like mostly TV.
Yeah. But in the story, the kid ends up impaling himself as he's trying to reach across the desk. She's going for
the letter opener.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. Because she's trying to defend herself. He ends up impaling himself.
He says he's trying to help her. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
the thing. What are we calling?
We're all like doing the motion the for spike, it right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I know what we're doing. Yeah. You know, the big spike.
It's just a big metal spike on your desk that you shove receipts on when yeah. you're done. I don't.
But that yeah, takes forever yeah. to say.
It really does. Yeah. I just want to do the motion, yeah, just, have it know. Come across audio wise, and be done with it. But yeah. we can't do it.
So he impales himself on the thing that you have on your desk that you impale all your receipts on. Staggers down the hall. And, you know, she's following trying her. To get out.
She thinks he's the killer at this point.
Well, right. Yeah. As you would. He's all bloody and. And it turns out in the elevator is the granny masked killer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I was kind of bummed by the way that it ended. It was kind of anticlimactic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess for the twist of it.
Right.
You know, being like, he was trying to save you. And, yes. you know.
It's like the beginning of Urban Legend with Brad Dourif.
Just tying it all back around.
There it is. Yeah. Very nice. See? Just getting it in
that
there.
That was about 50 minutes ago that we made that.
Yeah. I know, right? I'm just trying to make the circle, man. Trying to get there.
Not bad. So that brings us to the final segment of the wraparound story. Indeed. Tell us what's going on here with this whole thing with John Ritter and the...
Well, he's not going to make this sale. We can see that.
Why is that important?
He needs to make this sale today.
He's on a deadline.
And all we know is that his boss is not fucking around.
Apparently his boss has his wife and son captive.
This is mm-hmm. a shocking revelation.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
This is their sales incentive plan that he's been alluding to the entire time.
Yeah.
Now we're going to make you rich. You sell houses. Or we're going to kill your family, essentially, yeah. is where that's going.
Yeah.
So he gets a phone call from his boss. I always thought this was going to get nothing up to this point, I guess, has led to it being supernatural. I was going to thought like his boss is like the devil or something.
Yeah.
That's where I thought it was going.
Soul or something.
Yeah. yeah. To make the money and everything. And then he also had to get people to like buy into it and everything. And mm-hmm. those were the sales he was trying to make. But no, it really is just kind of a flesh and blood. Hey, we have your family. You better sell some houses in this neighborhood. And so he kind of gets a little more he gets way more desperate as the family has decided that
make me an offer.
They don't
make me an offer
houses.
Now.
It's great. I can't describe the John Ritterness of the make me an offer.
You're gonna buy a house from someone. Why not me?
Yeah, that's when he totally flips out and becomes John Ritter.
Right.
Yeah.
And they want to, and the couple wants to leave, and he's got his pen, and he just starts stabbing the husband, taking him out right in the neck.
And as he's stabbing, he's like talking about real estate facts. It's like,
it is. It's great.
Loan rates and shit.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that juxtaposition where it's just like, I'm murdering someone, but you can get low mortgage and a loan and you can pay off over time. And
Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
This
and the wife
is begging to be made into a soundboard. Like, there needs to be a soundboard for this, right?
That would be good.
Well, there you go. There's a little project.
All right.
Where's what you call it? E-bombs world. Get on that. Oh, a soundboard right now.
Yeah, the wife like flees out, gets in the car, and drives away.
Yeah.
But this is where the full scope of whatever kind of weird shit's going on in this neighborhood reveals itself, because people are being murdered in every yard.
Because some dude runs over a cat's head with a lawnmower.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Some old lady's taking out her trash, and there's like a leg sticking out of the garbage can.
There's a dead guy spiked in a pool as she drives by.
Yeah.
The monkey returns.
The monkey!
There's a marital dispute that ends in gunshots.
Gunshots right out there's front.
There's an explosion.
The car like runs over some guy, or whatever. Yes. Flips over the hood of a car.
She's driving through and figuring out that this is a
terror tract.
It's a terror tract.
It's a neighborhood from hell.
Apparently, this subdivision is the same one from Maximum Overdrive at the beginning. The killing montage of Maximum Overdrive, where the sprinklers kill the kid and everything. Mm-hmm. This is like the next street over from that.
Just madness, wholesale madness.
Oh, and it's wonderful. She drives off hysterical.
And we were laughing hysterically.
Oh, it was great. It was a great reveal, especially with the explosion. That was wonderful.
Well, I think it was like the energy of that, like that final John Ritter, you know, him just going absolutely bug shit crazy. Like kind of carries you right over to the...
And he gets to the window and he's like, make me an offer. It's so good. Bloody hands and everything. Oh, can't be said about John Ritter in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
He plays it perfectly, I think. Just
we
that nervousness and that sweatiness and just, it's very good.
Yeah.
Laughing till the end, till the credits ran out on us.
Yeah, because the only place we could find this was on YouTube. That's oh, right. No, you yeah. should spend $70 and buy the, yeah, the official not? Double yeah, yeah. double DVD. All right, so does that bring us to the end of Terror Track? Do you have any other stray observations? Or
I have like the strayest of observations. Did you guys know there's an episode of Three's Company where you can see John Ritter's testicles?
What?
Yeah, so what, yeah, there's a picture. I had it pulled up on my phone.
I'll look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I won't look away.
There's like, he's wearing like those like 70s sure, the, short yeah, shorts. Right, shorts. And like he here. Sits down in the bed and just like pops her head.
And it was on TV?
I mean, either you can show me or I'm going to look it up after
the
podcast.
Yeah, it was on TV.
So,
we're going to have to see that.
This needs
was
to happen.
Was Three's Company live or was it pre-recorded? Or they just
it was pre-recorded,
but
he said, when they like asked him about it, he said he told them to do one version, edit it, and one not, because sometimes you want nuts and sometimes you don't.
Oh, damn. There's some John Ritter nut.
Oh, shut up.
Damn. And you know nobody was wearing underwear back then. Yeah. Nobody. Underwears and bras are gone.
Reddit. Oh. The place that has everything.
Yeah, Reddit. That's yes. right. The yeah. front page of the internet. Yep.
But I think I actually like heard about it in a Cracked article years ago of like things that... Like, I think it was in the same article with like the guy in Teen Wolf has his dick out in those bleachers
oh, yeah,
at the end.
In the
like,
bleachers.
Yeah, yeah. That, it was an article about stuff like that, I think.
Sure,
so,
like
yeah.
things
yeah.
in movies. You may never have noticed this before.
Genitals
like, there
you
was
missed.
Dick in this movie.
Yeah. And a Back to the Future and all that other
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That kid just had to.
He just had to go to the bathroom, all right? Yeah, he just had to go to the bathroom. Nothing sexual about it.
Genitals you might have missed in Hollywood.
Yeah, there we go. Yes, that's a BuzzFeed article if I ever heard one.
Yeah.
I think that's
terror
it.
Track.
All right, so that brings down Terror Track. Terror Track, not to be confused with Terror Train. There's so many Terror on Tour. So we want to summon our male demon. That's Igor. Igor, where are you, sir?
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Why, thank you, Igor.
Thank you, Igor. Igor, can you get me another beer, please? Thank you. Thanks, Igor.
We should get him a little organ grinder outfit.
Oh, you think that'd be cool? Yeah,
I think so. With a little fez. Yeah.
A little tiny jacket.
Aww.
Are you okay with it? Igor?
And there he goes.
I don't
goes.
Think you like that idea.
Well, we'll yeah. do it anyway.
All right.
Igor brings us the mail. You can write in, and we hope that you do. Become part of the Freak Show family. You can write to us on Facebook. You can find us where facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. You can also write to us on Twitter.
@SatFreakShow.
Or the old-fashioned way.
SaturdayNightFreakShow@yahoo.com.
And we will read your comments on the air.
Is it Yahoo or Gmail?
It's Yahoo.
Is it?
Good yeah. God, man. It's been like 265.
I never say it. I never pay attention. I don't pay attention. What do you think I'm here for?
He's like, I don't need to write
I
in.
I don't know. I got the Twitter down. I don't need anything else.
You know where you can also comment? Is on YouTube. We're on YouTube. We post our entire shows on YouTube. Maybe that's how you're listening to us right now.
Please don't curse us out in Portuguese.
That's right. Alex.
That's fine. Whatever.
I mean,
we can't read those on the air, though, because we don't speak Portuguese. It would be kind of, yeah. It'd sound like we're casting spells or something, probably. So Alex wow. Brewis writes in and says...
Yup, that's exactly what it sounds like. Okay, we right. have mail.
Alex Brewis writes in and says he's one of the few, one of the proud. He says, hang in there. He enjoys our content. So there you go.
Oh, just, who's yeah. this? Wait, what's his name?
Alex Brewis.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Thanks, Alex.
Or ma'am, I don't know. I can't tell which one.
Stop
you are.
Stop talking, Sean.
So about tonight's movie, thank Terror you. Tract. G-Money writes in.
G-Money.
And he says, I've had this on a double disc with Cherry Falls forever. USA was so reliable for quality trash and Child's Play marathons.
Yes.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, they were. I agree.
What was it? USA was USA Up All Night,
USA
right?
USA Up All Night. Yeah. Up All Hell Night. Yeah.
Even not all whole night. USA was big on playing. I mean, Child's Play, Tremors, Critters.
Yeah, back in the day, USA was like the movie marathon channel.
It was kind of a place to go for horror, like
yeah.
kind of the maybe the cheaper stuff, but it was a place to go for it.
When was TNT and Monster Vision like in the mix? That was after Up All Night.
I think so. It felt like it to me. Maybe it overlapped at some point, but yeah. it felt like 90s. Definitely 90s. Up All Night was... Are we talking the Gilbert Gottfried, or are we talking Rhonda Shear? Up All Night. I'm saying words Colin does not understand.
I thought they were both on at the same time.
Does nobody know?
I don't know the time frame.
Oh, but Rhonda Shear?
Yeah.
No, yeah, we all know what I'm talking about
yeah.
here?
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. I just don't know.
It was Rhonda Shear first and then Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, okay.
He did the later ones.
Oh, all right. So she would have been 90s?
I think it was early 90s.
Is that the USA Up All Night? Oh. Yeah.
All Night.
Yeah.
It was horror every week?
I mean,
or like horror, sci-fi, cult, stuff like that.
It felt like mostly horror, but I'm pretty sure it was sci-fi, cult. I think it may have just been horror. I know Monster Vision.
That was
sci-fi, cult, horror, and everything.
Yeah. Hopefully chosen by Joe Bob Briggs.
And they give you the rundown of everything.
I know, they need to bring that back.
That's an education.
Those were the days.
Yeah. So about our previous episode, Dead Heat, Chris Huddleston writes in.
Dead Heat!
And he says that Joe Piscopo has said over the last couple of years that he regrets getting into bodybuilding. What do you think about the idea that being fit somehow makes funny people less funny and people thinking overweight comedians should lose weight? Should Ryan Reynolds trade weights for donuts?
He did a movie. He like, did where a he played fat both.
Movie, yeah.
He did both.
Just Boys Just Friends, yeah.
I mean, does Joe Piscopo regret bodybuilding because of all the steroids he took? That feels like where that was going.
Yeah.
Well, do you think that it makes funny people are less funny if they're
buff?
Yeah.
I don't know. Look at Chris Pratt.
Or Dwayne Johnson.
Right? The Rock's pretty funny for being a big guy.
Doesn't get any more ripped than that.
Chris Pratt was really chubby on Parks and Rec, mm-hmm. and now he's fit, and I think he's still funny.
I think back then, I think if you were a big, muscle-bound person, they didn't write the good comedy for you.
Yeah.
They made it was awkward. I mean, you look at it like Twins or Kindergarten Cop. You were meant to be stupid.
Don't
talk bad about Twins. I swear to God, if you do that.
I didn't talk bad about it. I was just saying that's how you write just those parts, sure. right? As yeah. oh, yeah. if you're yeah. big and muscle bound, you're stupid.
You're stupid, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's it. Like, that was kind of the
They're
conception.
Still doing that,
of it.
Right? Mm-hmm. There's Kindergarten Cop 2 with Dolph Lundgren coming soon. Or out now.
There's also Baywatch is coming. But yeah, I think it's a little smarter than...
Yeah, no, I think it's changed enough in the past years or so, to
be a big guy and be funny. Like, I think it's funnier to be that. You're not looked at as stupid. You can actually do the comedy at that point.
Terry Crews as well.
Terry Crews is fucking hilarious.
Terry Crews is hilarious.
So, Terry Crews is hilarious. So I think it's changed over the years. But back then, if you were big and muscular, you were not, you were dumb funny.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's what it was.
That's probably why he regretted it.
Right. So he was kind of a meathead back in then because he was muscle bound and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dom Cree writes in about Dead Heat, the movie that he chose, and says, call me crazy, but I think the final stage burn makeup on Treat Williams is also Sammy Kerr inspired.
Only Colin would know the answer to this one.
I see what you're doing there, Dom, and I appreciate it. And sure, why not? He's burned on half his face. We were saying during the show that it looked like he was inspired by the Terminator since the director was the editor on Terminator.
Yes, Michael Blatt.
But I appreciate that, Dom. I appreciate that shout out.
He's throwing you a bone right there. He's just like, Colin wants to talk about Trick or Treat some more. There
you go. Uh-huh. Just you wait.
As long as it's not fucking Repo, then I'm fine with that.
Yeah. All right, so that brings us to the end of the mailbag segment. That means we're going to do our final thoughts. Each one of us is going to get a chance to sound off on what we thought of Terror Tract and whether we recommend it to you. Are we all going to agree? Is it going to be a split decision? Is it going to be 3-on-1? We'll find out.
The suspense is killing me.
Colin!
Oh, Jesus, it's me. I'm up front.
What did you think about Terror Tract?
Surprisingly, Sean, I liked it.
Oh! I did not think that was going to happen.
Yeah, no, damn. I know. I was like watching the trailer. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, they are getting me to watch a TV movie. See, this is the thing. Like, I've always been like, oh, man, once the Saturday Night Freak Show goes, like, you can tilt it too far. And then all of a sudden, like, I guess we already did it, right?
I think.
We snuck in there with Sharknado on a technicality because it played in a movie theater.
Yes.
At one point, we tilted Sharknado.
I think we tilted the other way first. And I think now we're tilting back to the correct stream of movies we should be in. To me.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it opens a door, right? If you go with TV movies, then you got your Piranacondas and your...
Piranaconda. One day, just because it's been mentioned for many years.
Yeah, we can't do it. Can't do it.
Probably not. No, yeah. I don't want to see that movie.
I've seen it. Don't.
Oh, right.
Don't pick it. Don't pick it.
There are some things that are just way, way, way too bad.
No.
But I guess that was my fear going into it. And like you're seeing John Ritter. And I mean, I'm sorry. I know John Ritter from it. That's, you know, I mean, I yeah. know he did, you know, Skin Deep, I think I saw, and I saw Three's Company. And, you know, I mean, I saw these things, but I was never really a fan. Mm. I thought he was a fine dramatic actor in It. And then it was like, you know, seeing him in the trailers to this, it was like, eh, eh, eh. But it turns out, like, John Ritter
were you
is
doing
like
a Dom DeLuise impression.
That's like your Brando. What are you doing?
Yeah. Oh, it's a little higher pitched than yeah. Dom DeLuise. You gotta go.
Very good,
Dom DeLuise. Are you here? Oh my god! You just walked through the door.
Who knew I could do this many impressions?
He's dead.
But yeah, I was.
they must be all dead.
But that doesn't matter anymore. Now you can bring anybody back to life on the radio or in
when do we get the CG
arts.
Dom DeLuise? Yeah. That's what I want.
Yeah, who's knocking on the door to his estate? But yeah, it does play out like, you know, I suppose Tales from the Crypt, like a higher end. Kind of in the quality of its writing, right? I've seen a lot of Tales from the Dark Side episodes or whatever that were worse than this. This one actually seems like either these guys, I assume the writers, you know, wrote five or six stories and picked the best ones instead of going, you know, we're just going to write these three stories, or they're just that good, you know, in which case you figured they'd be doing more stuff, I guess, you know?
Right.
But as a horror movie, I mean, I can see why it has cult following, because if you did see this once a while ago and you thought favorably of it, you know, like, you know, I want to see it again. And where is it? You want to see if it lives up to, you know, what you remember. Having not seen it before the first time through, it's like, you know, each one of the stories, I think, worked. I was engaged enough to try and be figuring out, like, where they were headed or what twists they were going to take. I mean, that's always a good mark of a quality anthology movie. I mean, I'm not saying it's like a creep show or, you know, anything. Is it, you know, I would recommend it. Maybe not so much that you need to go seek it out, spend $70 on a DVD or anything, but it's more like if it comes across your field of view, if it pops up on Netflix or, you know, some streaming service and you have the choice of this or some other, you know, thing that we haven't recommended that you watch in weeks past, pick this one. You know, you could do worse than actually giving this one a shot. So I would say I would recommend it. Sean.
Damn. Did you see that Tales from the Dark Side is being released? Like, it was on the, it's in on DVD in Walmart. I see it every now and
then.
The
movie? Oh, the show.
The show.
Travis has got it.
Oh, yeah, did he get it? Yeah, I keep seeing it every now and again after you guys have been talking about it. Mm-hmm. That was odd. Terror Tract. I had fun with this movie. I really enjoyed it. I really loved, specifically, like you said, I think all the stories do work. Like you said, you're in it. You are trying to figure out like where these stories are going. I think the first one, is probably the weakest of them all. And that's not saying it's bad at all, but cause it had a few very effective moments, especially the husband being in bed for the jump scare and whatnot. And,
did I ruin the ending for you? I called that one.
Is that the one you actually called where the guy, where the lover was going to be outside the door?
Yeah.
Yeah. I yelled at Colin for that one.
Yeah,
but,
sorry.
Cause I'm just like, really? Oh, it makes sense.
You didn't see that coming.
I didn't. All right, fine. I'm not the smartest man in the world. I didn't get it before it happened. I can still be surprised by movies, Holly.
Okay.
But yes. To me, that was maybe kind of the most standard of them. For me, it really got better, especially when we got to Bryan Cranston fighting a monkey.
Oh God, yes.
I think I said it last week. I didn't know I wanted it until I got it, and it was highly enjoyable.
Is that the one you're going to remember? That's like the Zuni fetish doll one.
It really is.
That's
right.
The movie where Bryan Cranston fights the monkey.
Right. Yeah. In Trilogy of Terror, what do you really remember besides the Zuni fetish doll and Karen Black at the end? Yes, it will
she
be
was
Bryan
a teacher in a college at some. No, I don't remember.
Yeah, it's just no, because I'm having a hard time remembering the third one. What was the third one?
Wasn't
the third the third one was the Granny Killer, which is I guess maybe the least memorable. And that one, I mean, we figured out the twist of that at the end, but still, they're all I think they're all effective and they all work. But the acting, I mean, John Ritter, I think, is the, just like I said before, that nervousness acting that he's got pressure on him throughout the whole thing, and then his complete breakdown at the end where he's just yelling at people and stabbing people, like. It was fun. It was great to watch, especially and when she's driving around the neighborhood at the end, seeing that the whole neighborhood is just a neighborhood of crazies and shit is going wrong. It's a very entertaining movie. I liked it very much. I recommend it. Terror Tract.
Terror Tract. Yeah, this movie was so much fun.
It's fun.
So much fun. We've done anthologies in the past that I didn't necessarily enjoy as much. This one was fun. Like, just the stories were on point. They kept your attention enough. You know, none of them were weak enough that I thought they were boring. Mm. And I've thought that about anthologies in the past. Like, okay, I didn't really, it just didn't keep my attention. All three of these did. Even if one is weaker than the other, they all kept my attention. I thought that was really great. Mm. John Ritter, I love John Ritter so much. May he rest. Lord Almighty. I love that you could visually see his character losing his shit. Like, you start off and you've got this charismatic guy who's trying to sell a house, and you're like, yeah, this guy seems like he's successful, and, you know, he's a cool guy. And then you really do, every time they cut back, you see him just starting to lose it a little bit more. Like, okay, he really wants to make this sale.
Yeah. Maybe if it had been a higher quality, we could have seen him sweating a little bit more as the scenes went on.
Like, he really started to, like, panic, and you could see that, and it was just fantastic. And God bless Bryan Cranston. Man.
What can be said, Colin? What can be said?
I mean, really.
Heisenberg.
Yeah, okay. Sums it up. No, I thought he was fantastic. It's true. Years go by, we're going to be like, was this the movie where John Ritter was the realtor and Bryan Cranston fights a monkey?
Mm-hmm. Bryan Cranston fights a monkey is the sentence that I think this will be remembered by.
Absolutely. And the end with all the scenarios and the front yards, it was perfect. This was so much fun. I loved it. Definitely give it, what do we say, one fuck, one shit, one side boob.
Yes.
All the fucks, shits, and side boobs. All of them. Love it.
All right, Terror Trek. So this movie for me was like an utter delight. I was really excited to watch this movie, and I'm glad it like held up to my expectations.
It delivered.
It totally delivered. I think definitely go watch the trailer just so you can. I as best as we are describing it, we are not doing it justice to the level of insanity that occurs in this. Go watch the trailer.
Actually, was the trailer like a 5-minute thing that like gave away all the?
Yeah, it gave away a lot. It was like 3 minutes at least.
All right, maybe don't go watch the trailer.
Right, if it's a long trailer,
don't watch it.
But if you don't,
we kind of just gave everything away anyway. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was an hour into this where we gave everything away.
Yeah,
very true.
But even if you're not sure you want to sit through this whole thing, just watch the story with Bryan Cranston and the monkey, because that one alone is if nothing else, just watch that. But I would really like to see the horror community get behind this movie.
Yes.
I would like to see, you know, GIFs made of this. I would cheer the shit out of some GIFs of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I would like to see, you know, Fright Rags do t-shirts. I would buy a t-shirt with Bryan Cranston fighting that monkey.
Yes.
I would really like to see
John Ritter's realtor
John Ritter,
company.
John Ritter, right. John Ritter, like, on the front, like, just
make me an offer.
I want that t-shirt.
Yeah.
I really want someone to write their college thesis about how this is an indictment of, like, the white picket fence American dream. And, you know, there is some subtext here if you really dig into it, I'm sure. Yeah.
We didn't even talk about the whole opening to the movie, which was, like, a kind of an homage to, like, Blue Velvet or something, where the camera goes in into the neighborhood.
Oh,
right?
And
it goes and finds the...
The bird?
Well, it finds the worm, then the bird, then the cat eats the bird, then the cat gets hit by the car, and the dog, you know.
I will say this movie is really harsh on animal cruelty and very explicit about it. So if that's something that bothers you, just be forewarned about that.
Yeah.
Like, and it starts right from the get-go with it, too. It doesn't waste any time.
No.
So,
that's your intro to this world.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I really think there is some subtext to this movie if you dig into it, which sounds insane to say about a realtor anthology, but but I think it's great, and I'm really glad we decided to watch this one.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
It paid off.
So thank you, G-Money.
Thank you, G-Money.
That suggestion. All right, so next week then, it's my pick.
Colin!
Our final listener pick, Colin.
Right.
What's your pick next week?
I went down the list, and we watched some trailers. I'm going to do, you ready for this? John Michael Thor in Rock and Roll Nightmare.
John Michael Thor.
Wow.
I know, this movie's like...
This is going to be an experience.
I think it's like a mystery, or a Riff Tracks kind of thing, so I'm guessing it's going to be horrible. Horrible, prepare yourself. We'll find out next week. Rock and Roll Nightmare on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, ladies and germs, the basement is going dark.